that's what counts.
Welcome, you're listening to
Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, a weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right here alongside Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City, your host for Art on the Air. Our 2019 underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University, Browers Museum, and of course our landlord here in this historic building that we have our station at, Walt Breitinger. And you know, we do have space here for wonderful artists and everything throughout the building. If you'd like to look into that, contact Walt at 219-462-5821. That's 219-462-5821. And we'd like to thank them for their generous support. And we're missing our Greg Kovach, WPLE station manager today, so Esther is flying the thing today.
Yikes.
You'll be doing just fine. So if you're interested in being a guest on our show, you know, or sending us information about your arts, arts-related events, exhibit, or whatever, please email us, please. We're only seeing a few people,
please,
doing
please.
We're having to
even just to say hello. We really want to see.
Right. I know Meg.
We want to see if it works.
Yeah, well, it does. I know I got heard from Meg, and
yes,
I heard from South Shores, but only a couple of them. Anyway, you go to Art on the Air, WVLP at gmail.com. That's Art on the Air at gmail.com. And this program is rebroadcast on Mondays at 5 p.m. And something we've added recently is after maybe about a week of the show, we have a, I guess you call it a podcast show archive, and that's available at breck.com. That's BRECH.com/AOTA for Art on the Air. That's breck.com/AOTA. And you can listen to past shows.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing that. It's so excellent.
Well, I think you know, we're trying to Esther and I have been talking about this, and we're trying to broaden the scope of the show from where it was. Melissa and Greg did a tremendous
Amazing,
job, a great
wonderful.
Foundation. But we're trying to reach out a little bit more, and so that's one of the ways we're doing it. So now we're going to move on to our arts. Oh, I forgot the one thing I like to do. You know, if you'd like to support us. You know, that's an important ongoing thing for a station like this. This is a community radio station that's supported by underwriters, not advertisers, and individuals like you. So if you like Art of the Air or anything we're doing here at WVLP, please make us a pledge of support. It's ever so easy. You go to WVLP.org/support. That's WVLP.org/support. We have underwriting levels where we'll mention your name on the air like we did with our underwriters. If you'd like to underwrite this show specifically, we'd love it.
We'd appreciate that.
Yes. I mean, you know, everyone here at the station basically are volunteers. So, you know, your money's going straight back into improving everything we do here. So, again, WVLP.org.
And we have big dreams.
We do. We want to really expand things here. And, you know, we don't want you to just be a listener. We want you to be a supporter. So remember, like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good, and join the WVLP family today. Okay, we're going to move on to our arts calendar, and we'll start with Porter County at the Valparaiso University Center for Arts, Brower Museum. Continuing through March 31st, the following exhibits: Icons on Amelbox. It's art by Sofia Altanova and Oscarando Calamenco. Also on exhibit there is Line Force Burn Rubber by Sarah Kremp and Olivia Patridis, and The Art of Lynn Olson. At the Ellen Firm Gallery, US 12 in Beverly Shores, we'll have Characters by Irene Brown. She's a docent at the Beverly Shores Depot Gallery, but that actually she has her opening on Friday, today, the 8th, so you can do that. There'll be refreshments, so I think it's from 5 to 7, so you can see her characters right there. Village at Pines will have Michael Cross-Smith, and that's going to go through the end of February, February 28th, at the Village Gallery at Village Circle in Valparaiso. Chesterton Arts Center, their current exhibit is the Frontline Foundation Unbroken Alive Exhibition. It's worked by their clients in Recovery for Addiction. They just had their opening, and they had a musical group on their opening day. They played on their opening reception. In the other gallery, they have Quilting Gone Wrong, and in that back gallery shows the students of Leslie Carfelli, who taught at their fabulous fiber art class. And so you'll see small quilts and wild colors, fun embellishments, and rule breaking. We love rule breaking there, all over the place. So that's at the Chesterton Arts Center. Memorial Opera House Foundation, they'll be doing Shrek the Musical, and that opens February 15th, runs for 3 weekends through March 3rd, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. You can find out info at their website or Facebook page. Adults are 21, seniors, students, and military are 18, and they do have group rates, so you can contact them. And also in Chesterton, the Art Z, Fine Art Z, Antique Z Gallery, they have Friday, February 8th, so that's tonight. So if you're listening to this on Monday, you missed it. It's called An Evening for Two Acrylic Painting. It's kind of a Valentine type thing you can do together with your honey or your significant other. Evening with there to create a memory of art that you work on together will be done with Gretchen Bishop, who instructs you through the acrylic painting of your choice. You'll get a large canvas, all the painting supplies, a light snack, chocolates, refreshments. It is cost of $70 per couple, and you can wear paint-agreeable clothing, if you know what that means. It's age 18 and over only. If you're over 21, you can purchase wine from the Flying Mermaid. So that's what we have going on in Porter County. Esther's going to take us to LaPorte County and what's happening there.
That was a big, healthy Porter County. LaPorte County's not too busy until March, but there's a few things. So the Lubeznik Center for the Arts is exhibiting Nature Versus Everything, and it features 9 contemporary artists. Their work is environmentally minded. The exhibit explores the perilous battle between humanity and the natural world. Also in the NIPSCO Art Education Studio is Melissa Washburn's Cabinet of Curiosities. Discover all the wonder and beauty this exhibition offers. Southern Shore Art Association, their February exhibit is A Moment in Time, and they will have a closing reception on February 22nd. The gallery is located at 724 Franklin Street. They open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 to 5. You can find them on the web at southernshoreartassociation.com or visit their Facebook page, Southern Shore Art Association. Thaddeus C. Gallery is located in downtown LaPorte. Their hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. They can be reached at 219-326-8626 or at thaddeusc.com. Blink Contemporary Art is at 1709 Franklin Street, and they're exhibiting the work of Rick Lang and Suzanne Cohen Lang. The Nest is located at 803 Franklin Street in Michigan City, and this is the last few days of the David and Margie Kreiner exhibit. Please come out and see it. David has amazing abstract work, and Margie has really phenomenal geometric paintings, and it's a very beautiful exhibition.
And you get to see Esther there too.
Every day, all the time, except when I'm here. Singing Sands Toastmasters meets every first and third Monday of the month at 6:15. The next meeting is February 18th. It's a really vibrant group with over 22 members now. So please join in and let's make that table even fuller. Saturday, February 9th at 2 p.m. Central Standard, we're having Rose Uprising, a heart-centered fragrance event, and botanical perfumer Doreen Stelton of Verdon Fairy Fragrances is having an experiential all-about rose scent event. Doreen will talk about rose and perfumery and life, covering a bit of history, perfumery techniques, aromatherapy, and the heart language of the rose. Experience by smell a variety of all-natural rose oils from Bulgaria to Egypt and discover perfume oils that complement and make the scent of a rose sparkle. Doreen will have some of her exquisite all-natural botanical scent creations for sale, and we will be pouring rose hip tea and a few other little rose surprises. Bring your sweetheart, your best friend, or come solo. It's perfect for men and women, and it's a free event. Sunday, February 17th, from 1 until 3 p.m., it's the Mindful Fiber Artists Gathering, and it's a monthly event. It's a get-together encompassing all things fiber. All are welcome. Please bring a project, maybe something you're stuck on, maybe you want to critique. We have lots of experienced fiber artists there. If you're new, also, please come and check that out. Saturday, February 16th from 7 p.m., it's our monthly Every Kind of Talent show with Captain Ambivalent as the master of ceremonies.
Ta-da!
He's worth it just to come see Captain Sure. Ambivalent, because you never know what he's going to bring. So this, you, all of you, have a talent worth sharing. You just need a fantastic variety show to share it in. It's an open mic meets vaudeville meets show and tell, and we're looking for all types of performance. solo group musicians, magicians, dancers, filmmakers, actors, comedians, poets, storytellers, TEDish talkers, visual artists, crafters, animal trainers, every kind of talent. So please come and check it out. It's February 16th, and that's what we have.
You know, you said there wasn't a lot going on in LaPorte County, but it sounds like the nest is happening.
Well, at least in January and February, it's going to really blossom in March for the rest of the district.
And you get to see Esther. So, and, you know, maybe you can get Esther up on the stage and do something.
Yeah, good luck with that. I'm in the audience clapping.
Well, we're going to move on to Lake County now. South Shore Arts has their Arts Chamber of Commerce Luncheon. That's coming up Tuesday, February 12th at 11:30 at Asparagus Restaurant in Merrillville. The cost is $25. You need to email or private message somehow Donna Catalano from South Shore Arts. That's Donna at southshoreartsonline.org. You can find that if you go to their website. You can call her at the number. This is a quarterly social activity for artists, arts organizations, staff, board members, art patrons, however you're interested in the arts. And I've been to quite a few of these over the years. They get together and they talk about, they promote their things. This time they're not going to be an actual program. Sometimes they have a program where they talk about marketing art or other types of things. Anyway, so check that out on their Facebook page or the website at South Shore Arts for the Chamber of Commerce Luncheon. That's coming up on Tuesday. At South Shore Arts and the Bachman Gallery, they just started the new exhibit, Haunts. And it opens February 8th, it's going to run through April 21st, and they're going to have a reception March 3rd from 1 to 3. This exhibit was curated by John McCain. It features the works of, what we call guerrilla photographers who have been lured to the city of Gary and other cities, and they capture the haunting beauty of old architectural ruins on the verge of being repurposed as gardens or things like that. So you'll see a lot of things like that. So it's called Haunts in the Atrium Gallery at the for South Shore Arts, the Center for Vision Performing Arts. James Wachowiak continues through March 24th. There's an artist reception going to be also held on March 3rd in conjunction with the Haunts one. He's a Chicago-based artist with current paintings, installation focused on the role of color and familiar form. Toll Theater will continue to feature through February 22nd, Laurie Schimmer Carpenter and her oil paintings. Toll Theater is located on 5202 Holman Avenue, so you can see that and see a show while you're there. Studio 659, their annual juried exhibit, Artistic License, and it's a salon-style show that's running through March 4th. They've already had their opening. You can see that. They are right on 119th Street in Whiting. They're open Thursdays and Fridays from 12 to 7, Saturday from 10 to 2. You can find out information about them at studio659.org. Miller Beach Art and Creative District. Indie Windy, a love story. This exhibit just moved from the Bachman Gallery at the Center for Vision Performing Arts, South Shore Arts. And so they've actually sort of split it up a little bit because they were featuring one portion of it at their main gallery at Miller Arts. Another portion of it can be seen at the Gary Public Library, 22 South 5th Street, and then the Art House, a Social Kitchen, also on 411 East 5th Street. You can find out more information about the exhibits spread out at these locations, MillerBeachArts.org. Go to their Facebook page, or you can contact Meg Roman at Meg Roman, B-A-E-C-D, that's B-A-C-D, at gmail.com. You can find that information on their website. Well, Nostalgic Structures and Scenics exhibit, which is my exhibit, actually, has actually been extended through March 8th at the 8588 Broadway Professional Building. That's the former Chase Bank building there on Broadway in Merrillville. So you can see that work through March 8th. It features about 15 pieces of very scenic and scenic structures there. The Area Artists Association, of course, they're associated with Lebesnik, but they're going to have their exhibit, Artistic Narrative, and it's going to start February 14th, run through April 24th. It'll be featured at the Indiana Visitor Center at I-8094 and Kennedy Avenue. That's Exit 3, and the exhibit will feature about 60 pieces from about 15 artists of members of the Area Arts Association, and the Visitor Center is open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. There will be an artist reception on February 28th, 5 to 7 p.m., and I have 4 pieces in that work. So that's...
You're so busy.
Well, I've got stuff to say.
It's so wonderful.
You know, I usually store the stuff on my walls at my home, and, you know, my walls are starting to get very bare because I've got so many things out.
That's a good problem.
I guess so. Well, we're real excited today to have our guest here, and actually a returning guest, which is... associated with our guest. We have Dale Popovich, who is a master watercolorist and instructor. He's coming here. He'll talk about his background and everything like that. And then, of course, he brought along his lovely bride, who you've heard before about marketing for things like that, Marilee Jacoby Popovich, Pop Design. So we're real excited to have them here in the studio.
Hello.
Hi, Dale.
Hi. Thank you for having me today.
Great. We'd like to maybe start with a little bit about your background. First of all, your personal background, like where you hail from. Are you from Northwest Indiana? You come here, transplant? And...
Well, I grew up in Glen Ellyn, west of Chicago. But in 1954, my parents took us north to a kind of a rundown resort in northern Wisconsin. And that's really where my art career started, with the love of nature. I was only a year old at the time, but we ended up buying a house on the same lake later on, about 4 years later, and we ended up vacationing there. And the thing about going to Wisconsin is that you end up with being surrounded by the woods, the nature, and the animals, and so forth. And I learned how to swim, water ski, I climbed trees, ran through the woods. And you begin to notice as you grow older that there are the colors and the textures that are up there that I was intrigued with. But I was not interested in going into art at that time. I did draw and doodle and so forth. The phone book ended up to be the doodle pad that my mother really disliked after a while. But what had got me into the art field actually at that point is that I was a plumber for 3.5 years approximately. Out of high school, and I wanted to go into a trade at that time is what I thought. And during that time, I slowly began to lose my sight. I was going blind unbeknownst to me, and being young and foolish, I thought it would go away. So I ended up going to a doctor without my parents' knowledge, and he had me checked out by a neurologist, my family doctor. And they found nothing at that time. They did some x-rays and so forth. And you have to remember, back then things were a little bit on the primitive side. This is back in 73. And my parents began to notice something was wrong. And I began to notice more and more things became wrong because I was attending college at night and I couldn't read the books anymore. Mm. So I lost my peripheral feels totally. And so I took my parents or my dad's eye doctor's appointment, and the doctor determined that there was a blockage on the optic nerves where they cross just below the pituitary. And he decided you need to go back see your family doctor and get this, you know, on the road to be taken care of. And the thing that floored me was he asked me, does blindness run in your family, which it has a tendency of dropping your jaw at that point. So I ended up the next weekend at Loyola Hospital, and the following Monday, after going through, numerous amounts of tests, and one was a nasty test called a pneumoencephalogram, but I won't go into that. But I ended up having an 8-hour brain surgery at that point. After I got into recovery, I had regained some of my eyesight. And it slowly came back. So I had really gone in through the back door, or backed into the door of going into the art field, because after I got my eyesight back and I could see my hands again, I ended up researching art schools. And I found the American Academy of Art at that time, which I attended there 3 years. I took their foundations course, life drawing, for 3 years. I was anywhere from terrible to below average when I walked in the door, because I was self-taught, which one of the worst things about that is the teacher. It was not a good thing that I was doing myself, because I was learning a lot of bad habits. But I ended up working very hard, and I took illustration and fine art, majoring in fine art. And I ended up taking watercolor with Irving Shapiro, who was the director president of the academy at that time. And I probably went through 500 sheets of watercolor paper in the first semester. And our class time was 3 hours a day for each class. We had took two classes 5 days a week. And I did three paintings a day. And most of them ended up in a landfill, which I probably have a name somewhere on the south side. A small mound of
paper. A very colorful landfill. A
very colorful mound of ugly. But anyways, you begin to manifest your skills a little bit more and a little bit more. And I remember just before Christmas, he had said, well, he says, hey, you turned a corner. And I said, oh, that's good. You know, it's starting to look like
which
something.
Which one? Yeah.
And he says, you've got one good exercise here. Well, I was very happy with that until I got on the train to go home that night. And I go, he said exercise. He never said painting. You know, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, keep on working. I keep on working. And I always relate this to the students when I'm teaching. And I always consider myself a student, no matter what age you are, because you don't stop learning. You stop experimenting, you stop learning, then you must just sit down and do something else. Mm-hmm. But I always try to get across to my students, don't worry about what the next person's doing next to you. Worry about what you're doing. Compare yourself to where you were at, but also look around and learn from the students around you. I can remember sitting in life drawing next to probably the best student in life drawing class in the school. His name was Thomas Blackshear. And this guy could draw circles around most anybody and paint circles around most everybody. And I'd always try to cover up my drawing next to him because it was like I was
embarrassed.
Don't
we know that feeling?
Yeah. But I realized that I was learning so much from what he was doing, what the teacher was doing, and what I was seeing other students doing that it did help me quite a bit after time. But once you graduate, I ended up moving to California for a while, looking for a job, looking for the sunrise, and I ended up moving back because it wasn't what I thought it was. It's something that, great place to vacation, it's not really where I want to work and live. And I ended up getting a job at the academy teaching fundamentals.
And how did you get that?
I got that job through my beloved fiance at that time and now wife. She had heard of a job opening. And she says, do you want to work at the academy? Well, I've always wanted to teach. My first endeavor was to teach U.S. history. But I ended up teaching fine art and commercial art. So I wrote the letter. She rewrote it because I sent it to her. She sent it back, and I sent it out from California. So it did make the postal rounds at that point. And I was hired. And he was fairly impressed with me, and I went from part-time to full-time within 6 months.
So you had a natural affinity for teaching?
Yeah, I try to relate to the students, and I don't over-talk them. You know, I try to tell them how this is done, how you approach it. And I've always been impressed by a teacher I had in geometry back in high school. He always invited you down to his office if you didn't understand something, but he would never let you leave the office till you understood it. Mm. So if I would explain to my, at that time I was teaching 30 to 35 students, 7, 8 of them maybe wouldn't get it, so I'd call them back up to the desk. I re-explained it in a different way, perhaps a little bit simpler. And I says, okay, those of you who don't understand it, stay. The rest of you go back to work. And I'd re-explain it again until everybody got it. Because I really didn't like the students not understanding what you're doing.
You don't want to be lost, then
send them off into oblivion, because as a student, I was sent off into oblivion enough.
And also, the one thing that I've seen is in the mission of his life is that losing his eyesight, his mission in life is to teach people to truly see. And so he does that time and time again with all of his students.
So what does that mean to you, to truly see in a painting?
Well, to see the big picture first. And because details are unimportant. One of the things that I always like to convey to the students, I says, you're looking at the picture too close. I says, you need to put it further away from you or take your glasses off if you're wearing glasses, which a lot of the age group that I teach now, they become blind when they take the glasses off. So I usually post a picture 5-6 feet away from them. And the thing I always have to remind them, you're painting a painting, you're not painting the photograph. So you have to learn to shift material out leave out what it, what's unimportant.
Be discerning about what you are going to add.
And how to rearrange for compositional arrangement. And understand that blocking in a painting is you're building a painting. And when you're blocking in the painting, it's a building process that you're going from background to foreground. You're painting your values from light to dark, and you're painting your colors more intense at the beginning. And you're painting only large areas first. When I was a student, I was putting highlights on the bolts on the battleship before I considered the battleship or the background. Mm-hmm. And it's working backwards, and it takes you 20 times longer to get the picture to come together. And I had a lady come to my studio class that she would finish a painting in 1 to 2 months in her other art classes. And she had all these, what I call one hair brushes. And I says, do you have any other brushes? She says, yeah. She pulled out, because I do a demonstration now and again in class and show them what to do. She had these beautiful large brushes, 1-inch flat brush, a number 10 round, still in the wrapper. And I took away all her other brushes, and I put them in my drawer, and I says, you can paint the painting with these 2 or 3 brushes, that's it. Well, she literally shook the first time she tried something. After about a month in class, she actually finished a painting in one night, which 2.5-3 hours is pretty good for a student, because it would take me quite a bit longer. But going back to my childhood, the love of nature, to spend 3 months in northern Wisconsin in the woods and exploring. I mean, we're climbing trees. We're going out. We were hunting chipmunks and squirrels, which, you know, with a BB gun, you don't get that much. But but we would sit there and fish on the creek. My mom would go to town and leave us while she'd go to the grocery shopping. We would fish. Well, you begin to notice things. You begin to notice how the water flows. And I didn't take note of this to become a painter. I just took note because of the love of nature. And I, after my folks died, I had a good friend of mine who is also an art teacher I've been teaching with for over 40 years. And he always says, well, your colors are too bright. They're too intense. And I always like to tell my students, push your color, because I can always pull you back. It's harder to push you forward. And I says, Bob, I says, you need to see the Northwoods. So we had him up there for a half a week. That's all I could afford to take. And he's the type of person that gets up at 5:30 in the morning, which is like, I get up when the sun comes up or after, usually after.
Or the crack of noon is what I like to say.
Sometimes. And so I got up. I basically tried to get up when he got up so we'd have a cup of coffee, talk, and so forth. And we went out roaming the woods with a cup of coffee in hand. And we went through our property. My parents at that point owned 7 acres with their house. Mm-hmm. And we crossed the county road into unbeknownst territory. I don't know who owned the property, but we were probably trespassing. But he kept on noticing. I says, Bob, come over here. And I kicked a rotten log open. I says, look at the color. It was pure burnt sienna. Mm-hmm. And then I says, look at the colors that are on the forest floor. Look at the tenderness of the greens and how intense that is. His paintings changed miraculously after that. He says, I never saw that. I said, didn't you go to forest preserves? Well, he grew up in the city of Chicago, you know, so he's seen a lot of grays as far as I'm concerned. But when I'm teaching, I try to convey this message to my students, and I try to convey, do not be so critical on yourself. I force them to go in and make a mess. See what happens. Let the watercolor flow. Watercolor is a master medium that is very aggravating. I started off with oils
I was in college. I know. That was going to be one of my questions. Did you try other things and just fell in love with watercolor?
Watercolor, I took oils for a year, and it's a process of learning, and you're climbing the ladder, and you're sliding down the runs. You're going back up. You're sliding down the runs. But it's a question of, I needed to learn color, and I needed to learn value. And value is the most important thing, because if your values are not right, your color will not help it. But I took oils for a year, and The thing that got me into watercolors, not only that the president director was an internationally known watercolors, but my dad says, you know, he says, I always like watercolors, the way they look. And one of my favorite all-time artists was Winslow Homer and his watercolors. And Sargent with his watercolors. In fact, Sargent did more watercolors than he did oils.
They're beautiful.
He did the oils for the rich people to make a living, basically. And so I started taking watercolor. I thought, well, this should be interesting. Well, I'm not the type of person to allow an inanimate object to beat me, and this thing was beating me every day. And I'm watching the other students who decided that they would take watercolor, and these people were excelling a lot faster than I was. I was a slow learner. But that made me perhaps understand that making mistakes is good, you know. And
that's how you learn your medium anyway.
You learn your medium by making mistakes. Those create the successes. And I had a stack of watercolors in my studio that were not what I call successes. And I decided, let's take that stack and see what I can do with it. So I decided to see if I could correct mistakes. I ruined a lot of them, but what I learned by ruining them is how to correct mistakes. I can correct almost anything or everything if it has good bones.
Right.
If it doesn't have good bones, it goes to the landfill with my name on it. But you know.
And
well, you learned how to push.
Scary proposition, because once in a while I'll go downstairs, I'm hearing this tearing, and I'm like, what are you doing? He said, well, when I'm dead and gone, I don't want them to say this was my crowning glory painting. In his heart, he knew it wasn't.
Yeah, it's something you don't want out of your possession, out of your sight. An example of that is that when I was instructor at the academy, I'd walked into my previous instructor's class to see what my students were doing in his class. And he was sitting at the desk with a young lady that had bought one of his paintings at a antique shop on Belmont, I believe, up in Chicago. And it was one of his paintings from the early 50s. And he says, what did you pay for this? She says, oh, I paid $75. She was so tickled pink, she's got one of his paintings, because his demos were going for a little bit more money than he did in class that he'd hang up. And he says, I'll give you $150 for it. Well, as a student, when you're poor, you're going to take that $150 and, you know, give the painting away, which I wouldn't have given it to him for $150. But I went into his office later on that day to ask him a question. Here's the demo in the corner of his office, ripped in half.
Oh, my God.
And I looked, and I says, you ripped that in half? He says, yeah. He says, you don't want things to come back and haunt you.
So, you know, with your paintings, do you take the photographs? Do you work from memory? Because there's like this beautiful kind of nostalgic, dreamy quality to your work. Even though the colors are vibrant, it's just very transporting. So.
I take my own photographs. Sometimes I'll ask a colleague of mine if I can use their photograph, with their permission, of course. But I take my own photographs. But it's what you do with the photograph, as I'm always trying to.
Right, because you have all this stored memory of your walks.
Yeah. I tell the students you're painting a painting. So you're trying to dismiss all the things that are not necessary. You're trying to add some of your knowledge into the painting and the memories. And the experience that you have behind you in the painting process, you're adding a lot of extra things. And you go, where did you get that from? You know, I says, well, I'm pulling it from my memory of doing the thousands of paintings that I've done, and half of that's in the landfill, as I said. But you're pulling things from your memory, from all the background of what you've done. And the more paintings that you do, the more experience goes in. So you end up simplifying where things are not necessary to be spelled out, and only focusing in on what is necessary.
You're listening, by the way, I just want to get the station ID in here.
Yes.
Dale Popovich and Marilee Jacoby. Dale's watercolors. This is Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, on our weekly program. And we're so happy to have them in the studio. So
very much.
And the discussion about the North Woods, I have a strong affinity to the North Woods. I had my in-laws lived up there and spent probably many, many years up there. And so I'm familiar. What lake, by the way, I'm just out of curious, where you live?
Well, we were on north of Eagle River, Wisconsin, on North Twin out of Conover.
Okay, that's right.
On Highway
K at that point.
Those are from the Northwoods will know about good old K. It's very scenic.
Yes, it's very scenic both ways. It cuts across Route 45.
In Wisconsin, they even call them a rustic road. There's a rustic road designation.
Yes. And the thing that was interesting is my parents had actually, going back to that, my parents had bought 200 feet on a lake back in 1957. Mm-hmm. And no house on it. And my parents would go down and visit the property every time we came up. And my dad made excuses to pull us out of school, and we'd go up. So we stayed at the resort, and we would walk across other people's property down this path along the lake. And it was about a mile down from the resort. And there was a carpenter building a house on the 200 feet next to us. Well, my mother fell in love with the house, and my dad asked him if he'd be willing to sell the house and the property. And this man was very shy, but he wasn't interested in selling. This was in the spring of 58. And my dad, we took us up there in the fall. We walked down to our property again. Their thoughts was to put a trailer on the property till they could afford a house. And my dad says, "You guys go ahead. I'm going to go talk to Simon." And Simon had 11 brothers and one sister. I mean, it was a big farm family. And he goes into the house. He was finishing up the cabinets in the house. And he says, "Simon," he says, "how about if we trade deeds and I buy the house on this property?" Well, he got down off the ladder, came down, shook his hands. My dad put $25 down. They went to town and did the deed. They changed the deeds at the county courthouse. And that's how we ended up with this house.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was only a 1,000-square-foot house, basically. You know,
a tiny house.
Yeah, but it was kind of grand because you had two bedrooms that were on the smaller side, but three kids and a dog, it sufficed. One bathroom and another bedroom for my folks. But it had a very large living room with a cathedral ceiling with beams going across, all knotty pine, and a country kitchen. That was it. You know, and my parents raised us in that house during the holidays and summers. But the thing that I loved doing snow scenes, and my parents, my dad in about 1960, 61, says, "How about if we go up and we spend 2 weeks up at Christmas?" Well, you cut down your own Christmas tree off your own property. You go to town. You watch the hockey game at night. You see the sleigh rides. You have the decorations. I mean, everything was just fantasy land to me, the colors and everything else. I loved doing snow scenes from that time on. Even though I wasn't painting, I was enamored with the snow and the colors and the tints. And the sparkle of the snow was mm-hmm. so clean compared to
the colors
really
are so oh, yeah. vibrant.
But we now own a log cabin in the woods. We sold my folks' house on the lake, and we got a bigger house. We got a newer house, same acreage, but we're in the woods, and we're not paying two-thirds more of the taxes.
Oh, yeah. Wisconsin really gets you if you have lakefront property.
Yeah. So we bought this house. We've redone the inside with the help of the a fella that worked on the house as a carpenter mason when he was 19. So we've redone, I would say, 95% of the house. And it is so unbelievable of the color. When Marilee takes a picture shooting out of the log cabin at night, the sky and the outside colors like Maxfield Parish. It's absolutely incredible. Hold up the picture, Larry, for me.
Okay, well, here, as you can see, oh, look at that. It looks beautiful. Sorry we don't have television here. But
last year we had decorated the year before we decorated for Christmas, we left it up all year long. So every time a guest would come up, since we decorated for
that
Christmas.
That was one of my fantasies, to have Christmas up all year long.
And the log cabin suits itself for Christmas. But it was kind of funny because you decorated for Christmas for us? Oh, yeah. We spent all day doing this, and it's like, yeah, right. We left it up, and we just dust a few things. But to actually go out, we'd always try to go out when I'm not working around the house or trying to paint something in the house. We always go out. We do photo shoots all day long. And there was one time that it was my birthday in April, and I says, "Let's go out and do a shoot tomorrow. And I'll take pictures of all the stuff coming up for the spring." And we woke up in the morning, it was 5 inches of snow, which happens. And so I ended up taking pictures. I said, let's go. This is my favorite color is, you know, Christmas. And I ended up finding these spring runoff streams that I never would have seen without the contrast of the snow. And I ended up doing a series of paintings, and one of them did win an award down in Nashville, Indiana, because I'm a member of the Indiana Heritage Arts down there, and I also am at the Indiana
Brown County
Gallery down there.
And that Indiana Heritage Arts Show is always in June. It's open to anybody that has lived in Indiana in the past or lives in Indiana. It is one of the best kept secrets in this in the Midwest. It rivals anything that's in New York. You've got some of the most incredible artists down there, or in Indiana.
Indiana, yes.
It's
yes.
all traditional, impressionistic art.
You know, one of the subjects I like in the Northwest, have you ever painted the Minnow Shack?
Oh, yes, over in Saner.
Yes.
Yeah, that.
Right on Starlight.
Not too far down the road, there was a zoo called Aqualand.
Yes.
And
on County
it had all the indigenous species of the North Woods, and I remember we were in there, and somehow they had the deer roaming free, and somehow a deer got into the lady's washroom, and this one lady came out screaming like she was being attacked by this deer, and my father couldn't stop laughing. But it was kind of a fun place to go. We'd always take the people that would come up and visit to Aqualand.
We even went there on a date.
Yeah, we went there on a date. It's a cheap date.
What's nice about that's where my mother-in-law lived on County K on Ballard Lake, which is just around the corner from Star Lake.
Yes.
So I know I've done the Minnow Shack numerous times. Unfortunately, now it's got an aluminum roof. They had to do it because of the roof. But I have an older photo, which luckily was color and black and white, when it was the Fredrickson sign was on it and still had the regular roof on it. So I've done that, and I've actually repurposed it as more of an artsy version, you know, where I went in and manipulated it in such a way. And also I got one in the Star Lake store. One time we were leaving, I stopped for a minute, just like the light, took a quick, almost a snapshot. I composed like about 5 shots and later then repurposed that. And so, yeah, there's some wonderful things up in the Northwoods of Wisconsin.
Yeah, we need to put a sign on the back of our car. We stop for any scene, so right, stay back 500 feet. Because we pull over quite often just to take a shot, where other people will be driving along during the sunset, being blinded by the sun, and they're probably cussing and swearing that they can't see. We pull over and we take pictures. We enjoy because during certain times of the day, in the morning and in afternoon, is really when you want to go out and take pictures or go out and examine what's going on in the woods with the light.
Photographer, we call it the golden hours.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is. It's definitely.
I know, the light is so beautiful.
Yeah,
and then on top of that, I'm shooting videos because we have I'm shooting what they call B-rolls because we're working on online. We have an online art school.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
Towering Winds Academy of Fine Arts. So we are putting some of this fill because that's his place of worship for painting.
Oh, yeah. We were shooting at one of my favorite places just after New Year's. It was 17 below. And she says, we need to do a video of this because I wanted to get this one scene in. And I've painted the Wisconsin River. It's right where the Wisconsin River starts. In Phelps, there out of
Lake, I think Missouri. Is that the one I used for the promotion for the show? Yeah, I had to cut it down, but yeah, that was it.
And I've done this in many times of the year, different seasons. And every time you go back, it's different because the water level, the snow, the fall colors, the summer, you go back in late summer and you got the fall colors starting to show themselves. But we're out there at 17 below. We got our two dogs in the car because we weren't silly enough to bring them out in that weather. And every 5 minutes we had to stop because the batteries on the camera were just filing down quicker. And we're sitting in the car and we're waiting till, and you go back out again. And I'm trying to explain what I'm looking at, how I was going to paint it and so forth. Because when I do a workshop, I do what we call paint-alongs. And you spend all day, I do a demonstration in the morning to show the techniques and different approaches to a watercolor. And in the afternoon, they get a photograph and they draw it up at lunchtime. And I show them the first phase of the watercolor, and then they paint the first phase as I did with the same colors. Then they go into the second phase in building the painting where they're honing in on the smaller and smaller elements, and then finally how I finish it on the third phase. It has become very popular, and it also, I have found that the students you engage the students much more in that fashion because they learn much more. The way they used to do, you'd watch a demonstration all day long, and you go home and you try it, and you forget.
You forget the nuances.
Right.
Yeah. And that way, I'm walking around while they're painting, and I'm guiding them through it individually at the same time, and they don't lose sight of what had just happened.
Right.
And they're so very thrilled results by the end of the workshop because they're literally walking away with a painting. And normally, they wouldn't do that.
Right.
And it's not like one of these sip and paint parties. This is where they really are learning.
Right.
Yeah, because I'm really good at sipping, but I wouldn't be good at painting. But the thing is that when you're doing this, is that they get all excited. I had a lecture demonstration workshop in Minocqua at the Lakeland Art League, and it was in a gymnasium of an old school, which is now their library, and they couldn't get the heat to come up. It was at 54, and I had 20 people show up, which, I mean, it was really cold outside, and the lady that was in charge of it was trying to get the heat to come on, which she got the blower, which just blew the 54 degrees around.
All around.
The ice caps on your water was...
Only one older lady had left because she just got too cold, but there were 19 other brave souls that stayed until the janitor came in just about noontime and says, no, this is where you raise the temperature. So we started warming up after that. But they do get more engaged with what you're doing, and you get engaged with the students more by showing them, telling them, and then guiding them at the same time because you don't lose them.
Right.
And in a demonstration that you're watching, you go home, you try it, or you work in class afterwards, you're not that engaged
right.
with what's going on.
The results are spotty usually.
Oh, it's very spotty. It's like when you lecture to the students. I always tell the students, I says, bring a tape recorder, you know, because you can't take notes of everything. You have to listen to the tape because we investigated years ago with the Spirit Corporation how much you actually retain. It's 40% with notes. If you engage with a tape recorder, you can fill in the gaps.
And now they just videotape it with their phones.
Yeah, and I always tell my students, you can take pictures, you can videotape anything that I'm doing. I says it's all public knowledge, and some instructors don't like that, but I encourage them to do that because they have a record of what I've done.
Oh, sure.
And then he can follow right. along at home again. And this is one thing with the Towering Winds Academy, our online school, is that I'm teaching the same method. It's a pain law. You take a break. And once they buy the lesson, they have it forever to
right.
redo and redo.
Yeah,
and
you need the muscle memory. And so it's a really
it's
great.
It's the eye-hand coordination mm-hmm. and so forth. When I started life drawing, this is always a good story. When I was in life drawing class, I had a wonderful instructor. And when I was self-taught, as I talked about the worst teacher in the world, I would start off with one eye, then the other eye, then the nose, then the mouth. And I drew a lot from Civil War photographs because of the high contrast image that you were looking at. So it was simplified quite a bit. And my hero was Abraham Lincoln, so I drew a lot of Lincoln. And so I get to class, and they're starting with big shapes and then working into small shapes. Well, I was lost for months until it finally clicked in. And we had a process that we had to go through with a long pose of the model because you gesture, you do quick sketches and so forth. Well, we had to be within an inch of the border anyway, top, bottom, side, side. And I got down to the bottom one day and I'm at the ankle and the foot is not going to fit. And I'm looking at how to solve this. And my teacher comes along, very dear man, his name was Bill Parks, and puts his hand on my shoulder and he says, you want to know how to fix that? And I says, yeah, I was excited. He says, let me show you. He takes my chamois, wipes off the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
And I looked at him, I was dumbfounded. But it finally sunk in, that's the only way you fix it is you start over.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not working, start over. So I started over, and about a month later, I ran into the same problem. He was down the row, about three or four students, and I looked down the row, and I saw him coming. I'm going, I got to fix this, so I just wiped it off. And 3 minutes later, he comes by, and he puts his hand on my shoulder. He goes, good fix, and he keeps acting. But you learn that there's sometimes that If you've gone the wrong direction, you need to start over. It's
and
never
it's not precious.
Never wasting time.
Right.
You're always gaining experience of you don't do that, you do this, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, that's why I rip things up. I did one on my mother. She asked me to paint a Victorian house. I had just gotten over the flu, and Mary Lee says, that's not one of your best paintings. I wouldn't give that to her. And I was still not feeling it. I says, it's fine. Well, I gave it to my mother. She put it in the antique frame up at her house on the lake. And I got up there that summer for vacation with Mary Lee, and I looked at the paint. I'm going, God, that's terrible. And she says, I told you. So I said, I told my mother I'm going to take this. And she goes, no, you're not. I says, yes, I am. So while they went to town one day, I took the picture out of the frame and hung the picture frame back up vacant. All you could see was the wood paneling through the glass. And I took the painting home. And
Did she notice?
And she calls me up when I get home. She goes, where's my painting? I says, it's in half in my studio. I says, I'm painting you a new one. So that's
What are you currently doing? Workshops, teaching?
I'm doing workshops. First off, I'm doing a workshop on June 14th and 15th. Thank you. Down at the Brown County Art Gallery.
Oh.
It's a Friday and Saturday. It's all day on both days. And I'm doing a workshop up in Door County at the Peninsula Art School, July 10th through 13th. And I'm doing a one-day workshop at the Lakeland Art League again, May 29th, which is, I think, a Wednesday. And I'm also doing a workshop at Dillman's in Lac du Flambeau, August 25th through 30th. It's a four-day workshop. And then this next, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, February 16th, I'm doing a free demonstration at the Palette & Chisel down in Chicago from 10:30 to 12.
Is that open to the public?
It's open to the public, and anybody that's interested in the kind of things I do that are interested in attending class but want to see something first, it's open to those people.
And that's an amazing building. It's an old brownstone. The Palette & Chisel was started by somebody from the Art Institute, and they felt like they weren't getting enough drawing over 100 years ago. So this man opened his brownstone up, and they had, on the weekends, artists would go there and sketch live models and started learning oil painting, and since then it's just grown into this beautiful organization.
Wow.
And you teach there too, Dale, don't you?
Yes, I teach fundamentals course there with Robert Kajeki, and we teach it on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I co-teach with him. He teaches on Tuesday mornings, I teach on Thursday mornings. And we teach the same class, but we teach in tandem with one another. We have the same beliefs on what we teach. Even though we have different views on things, because I'm glad we're not the same, we give them different ideas about the same subject matter. So it's a structured curriculum. It's the same fundamentals program we used to teach at the American Academy of the Art when I was there. I was there for 22 years, but it changed direction and it was time to leave.
So is your online classes, are they live now, or is it just in the works?
It's live.
Is it live?
Yeah. We've got three classes on there right now.
Yep. Excellent.
And I also teach watercolor there in the afternoons on Thursdays. The fundamentals is in 10-week increments, so there's 20 days of classes. And my watercolor class is in 5 weeks, which is 5-day increments, basically, for 5 weeks, one day a week. And I also teach at the Elmhurst Art Museum on Tuesdays from 9:30 to 12:30, and then also the Main Street Art Center in Lake Zurich.
On Wednesdays
from 10 to 12:30.
It sounds like, when do you paint for yourself?
In the evenings, on the weekends.
So do you, like, when you finish a painting, do you have like a protocol before you start another one, or do you know what you're going to do? Do you have a cup of tea and think about what the next one is?
Well, the thing is, when I'm working in my studio, I have I only work on one painting at a time. Mm-hmm. You never want to divide your attention. So I work on one painting at a time until it's finished. And usually I can finish a painting in a day if there's time to do it. Or I'll set it up and look at it. I've set up certain paintings for a length of time and looked at them and see what is not right.
And do you favor a particular size, or does the subject matter inform the size?
Subject matter sometimes does. A lot of my paintings are half sheets of watercolor paper or quarter sheets of watercolor paper.
The economics of the nation affects it too.
Yes.
We noticed when he's in the shows down at Nashville, Indiana, that that's also, he is in the gallery too as a member. And they noticed that when things get tight in a nation, the paintings get smaller.
Yes.
And now they're starting to get really big.
Yeah, they're starting to go bigger. But it's lots of times I'll just do studies in the studio. I mean, scrap pieces of paper just to work out a problem or two. And that's when my studio students will come and go, oh, when did you do this? Oh, when did you do that? And I have a couple of students that like to check the garbage can once in a while. Well, what'd you tear this in half for? You know, you could take the half and just frame this half. And I says, let me see that. And I tear it again in half. I says, now you can't.
But you can also find Dale at dalepopovich.com. And we have an online store there. It lists the workshops. It lists his classes. It lists the...
It's a very easy-to-use website.
Yes.
I wonder why that is. You must have somebody that helps you with that website.
I also have G. Clay prints on there, too, of the what I call my successful paintings. I happen to marry a woman that was a lot smarter than I was. She's given me the opportunity to work in the studio while she does my technical aspect of my career. Because
.com.
Okay. And that way they can sign up for classes and...
Yeah. Check it out. And dalepopovich.com is his website. And then one other thing, too. Dale and I are both members of the Ileana Artists, and we're meeting this Monday at 6:30 at Westminster Presbyterian Church, and that is on 8755 Columbia in Munster. It starts at 6:30, and I am actually going to be giving a lecture. I'm the guest host, or guest visitor, and even though I belong to it, on claiming your online presence as an artist. So I'm going to walk you through the first things that you need to get on board with the online presence.
Well, very good. Well, we'd like to thank you guys here today. You've been listening to Art on the Air, and I thank Dale Popovich, our observer, watercolorist.
So
I know
interesting.
That, and along with Marilee Jacoby Popovich, who's been here and also been here before. Art on the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. for 1 hour, and it's rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. with your hosts, Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. We thanks to Greg, even though Greg Kovach, the station
thank
manager,
you, Greg.
Is
yes.
not here, but we got Esther did a fine job flying the plane. If you're interested in being a guest on air, again, you can send us your art-related event, exhibit. It's artontheair, WVLP, at gmail.com. That's artontheair, WVLP, at gmail.com. Next week we have Esther?
Yeah, we have Julia Nielsen from The Closet by Franklin Vintage and Amanda Joyner with Chef Bizarro Millinery, two best friends who opened a business together in the Uptown Arts District in the Art Space building. So we're looking forward to hearing about how that's working out. Their two businesses combined. Excellent. I will just say that ahead of time.
Very good. Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoyed today's show. And again, talk us up around the world. We'll see you next week right here at 103.1 FM with Art on the Air.